Hello, everyone, and welcome to our parenting call on collaborative problem solving. My name is Amy Bryant of Parenting Beyond Punishment and Wild Child Counseling, and I'm just making sure that everybody can hear me, and it looks like it's working right now. I'm a licensed and board-certified mental health counselor, an educator, and a child advocate, and I specialize in working with children, adolescents, and families. I started Parenting Beyond Punishment to provide an online venue for helping parents learn how to guide children and set boundaries without resorting to spanking, yelling, and other punishments. And so I'm really glad to be here today with Amy Phoenix of Presence Parenting, because she's going to talk with us about collaborative problem solving as a viable alternative to punishment, power struggles, and other, what she calls, not much fun parent-child interactions. And I really love that description. Amy is a mom of five, a mindfulness meditation facilitator, a certified positive discipline parent educator, and an avid parent-child relationship advocate. Amy, welcome. And I have to say that I might call myself a parent-child relationship advocate, because I think that that is just beautiful, and I love it.
That's wonderful. Yes, I definitely advocate for everybody in the relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Thank you for the warm welcome. I'm glad to be here and to share my experience with collaborative problem solving and hopefully help some parents bring some pieces together this evening in relation to, you know, how to work through the problems that we experience with our children,
mm-hmm.
because they can definitely be sticking points for all of us and make life kind of miserable at times. So
yes.
Would you like me to just talk about
what
drew me to... Okay.
Okay. Yeah, tell me a little bit, just maybe introduce the topic and what... I know you were going to tell us a little bit about what brought you to it, and I'm really interested in hearing that.
Right, great. I've been, you know, studying positive parenting approaches for about 14 years plus. My oldest is a little over 14, and I did some studying before I ever had kids. And I, of course, didn't think I'd have much trouble with all of this until I got here as a parent, you know. I thought it would probably go kind of smooth or something. I don't know what land I was living in. But anyway, once I hit the toddler years with my oldest, I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And, I did have some anxiety and stuff earlier on, but I didn't really realize how much of an issue it would be for me personally until she started to, you know, have more say in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I really struggled with punishing and spanking and yelling, and I didn't want to. And when, you know, I was beside myself a lot of the time because it was just really against my inner values. And read some stuff, talked to some people, but was still getting a lot of conflicting messages from those I was interacting with at the time. And then my second child came along when my oldest was about 2.5. And he witnessed me struggle continuously with my daughter and yell at her and spank her sometimes. And lo and behold, when he got to toddlerhood, he was extremely explosive. And I felt like he's been seeing me explode. And so I'm sure he has something to do with, you know, the whole picture here. Anyway, I knew I didn't want to do what I had done with my first child. And I was really looking for alternatives. And at some point, I came along the work of Dr. Green, who wrote The Explosive Child.
Right.
And I, like I say, I've, you know, looked at a lot of different pieces. There's so many great parenting resources out there, great parenting authors and people sharing information. And this model just really brought a lot of things home for me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that, you know, punishment and everything that comes from that place inside of me, wanting to be forceful or aggressive or retaliatory towards my child, you know, that wasn't what I wanted. It didn't work towards actually getting the cooperation that I wanted or the connected relationship that I wanted. It didn't feel good to be that way with my kids. And when I heard, you know, Dr. Green's approach and his simple way of explaining it, I thought, oh, wow, that's something I could really get with. And the other thing about it is, you know, it's all focused on problem solving. And when I look at the world as a whole and myself as an individual and I think of where I struggle, it's when I feel like I have trouble solving a problem. Like there's something, I have a problem and I'm not really sure how to solve it. And the other piece of his work is lacking skills to be able to, you know, meet an expectation. And that's the other piece is like, okay, if I can't solve a problem or I can't do something, I don't really have the skills to do it. Like when I was early on in parenting and I was pretty angry, you know, I had rage issues, I didn't have the skills to respond to what I was experiencing any differently. Because a skill to me is something that, you know, you've practiced, it's become integrated. We can do it without thinking about it a lot.
Right.
So anyway, that's what drew me to it was that it doesn't rely on punishment. It does rely on building skills and working through problems together, and it works.
Right.
There's research to back it up, and I noticed that the more and more I embrace it and work through my own stuff, that it works to help me and my children solve problems and work on our lacking skills that we have so that we build the skills that we need to, you know, deal with the challenges of being human beings and to be functional human beings in this world. So I would be glad to give an overview of the model now if you want, unless you want
yeah,
to have any other questions.
That would be great. You know, I was just thinking that I think one thing that makes it easier to understand is that you go from this place of I'm doing these things wrong to, oh, I'm not, it's not that I'm wrong or I'm bad. It's that, like you said, like I'm lacking those skills. And I love that he points that out, and it sounds like you were like, you know, this is, I just need to learn these skills. So, yes, I'm really looking forward to you telling us more about the model.
Yes, definitely. And I would say to any parent who feels like they struggle with that kind of a thing, you know, anger or rage or just whatever, that, pardon me, it is about lacking the skills or feeling that there's a way to find a solution with the problem. And sometimes a solution, as we'll talk about in here, is setting something aside temporarily. And we can do that in our lives outside of parenting, too. But when I realized that the beating up of myself that I was doing wasn't helping me, but
right.
It was making everything worse, it was because it was feeding my own, you know, negativity cycle inside myself. And I realized, okay, I'm lacking the skills. There was a weird space of kind of like, is it okay to not beat myself up? I mean, it took a while for me to
right.
work out of that. But as I came through that and was like, okay, I am building the skills to meet these problems.
Yeah.
I am, you know, to be able to respond respectfully and still, you know, have boundaries and that. It's been life-changing. So that's really what it is. I mean, we just, if we could do something different, we would, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's just really how it is. So, I'll try and give a simple overview of the collaborative problem solving model. Now it is now called right now, Collaborative and Proactive Solutions with Dr. Green, who has livesinthebalance.org. I think, are you going to share those links after the call? Or
you know, I will. I will send them in an email with the recording. With
okay, great.
Recording.
There's going to be some documents that I'm referring to as I do this just for reference afterwards. You can find those online at the livesinthebalance.org website where there is lots of resources to listen to a radio program that he does pretty regularly, I think weekly throughout the school year. There's lots of archives of audios. There's lots of things you can read more about this. So afterwards, feel free to go have at it.
Yeah.
As an overview, he does have a one-pager little overview on his site. And what I really want to point out is that, you know, we often wonder, why are kids challenging? Pardon me. And he talks about that they're lacking the skills to not be challenging, that if they had the skills, they wouldn't be challenging, and that they do well if they can. And that's also a nice thing to, you know, put in our minds about ourselves. It's not an excuse. It's just that we all want to do well if we can. So if somebody had the skills to do well, they would. And so this is kind of assuming that kids do well if they can and that they need to, you know, build the skills to be able to do well. And then he takes it deeper to, when are they challenging? Well, the demands or expectations, like, exceed the skills that they have. So if I have an expectation that my child can stop arguing with their sister and work out a problem, you know, respectfully, and my child doesn't have the skills to do that, I haven't practiced that with them, or that particular child, you know, hasn't had enough time or maturing to be able to do that, then that's when they're going to exhibit the challenging behavior. just a moment here. I'm trying to decide exactly where I want to go next. I think I'm just going to keep with this, the simplicity that I was talking about. So basically, challenging behaviors are unsolved problems mm-hmm. or lacking skills. Now, what he points out with this model is there are three plans that we can kind of work with. And this is one piece that I think that we can all relate to if we're honest with ourselves, is that plan A is a unilateral approach, which means one person is trying to solve the problem. It's like a top-down. So the parent is going to solve the problem without any input from the kid or minimal input. And right. this is what often leads to power struggles.
yeah.
The challenging behaviors, the not so much fun interactions, and like I shared in a post the other day, what's also problematic in here is that they don't learn the skills. You may have a child who responds out of fear, because I do hear that sometimes. Oh, well, you know, the kid responded to me just taking over. and
right.
some may respond out of fear, but that's different than learning and gaining the skills and actually solving the problem. So plan A is unilateral. Adult solves the problem often through power over the child. Dr. Green's approach is plan B, which is the collaborative solving approach, which sets plan A aside. So this piece is challenging. Like, for those of us that, you know, I mean, we all have, to some degree, you know, innate nature to control things.
Right.
And that's just kind of part of being human. But once we're aware of that, we can create a little space around that and do things a little bit differently, especially when we see it doesn't work to control things. Mm-hmm. Now, he does talk about, you know, plan A might be necessary if you have a very big safety issue. You know, your child's about to run in the street. You're going to pick up the child and put them to the curb and, you know, go talk to them. But it doesn't mean that we have to hit them, you know.
Right.
You're still imposing your will. You're solving the problem in the moment. But then, hopefully, you go have some conversations that are more collaborative where you can talk with this child, even a young child, about what they can do differently in a situation and focus on a solution. So plan B is the collaborative and proactive solutions model or collaborative problem solving. And then there's plan C. And plan C is temporarily moving a problem to the side because it's not an immediate problem that needs to be addressed. And it gives a little bit of space to where we're not, like, hyper-focusing on all these problems and lagging skills with the kid. It gives some space to just connect with our kids and go, okay, you know, we can put this one on the side. Maybe it'll kind of work itself out with maturity or mm-hmm. changes in the family or whatever, and we'll come back and revisit it.
Right.
So in the CPS model, he calls everything ingredients. There are steps. You kind of need to embrace the steps in order before you can actually embrace the whole model and approach towards handling problems with our kids. And the first is change your lenses. And that's the part that I talked about initially, which is kids do well if they can. So seeing your kids different. Identifying the lagging skills in unsolved problems, and then solving problems together.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit.
First you change the way you see your child. So that was right. Like what you were talking about when you said, instead of seeing them as having challenging behavior, you see them as having a lack in skills or having some unsolved problems.
Correct. And that they will do well when they can.
Okay.
And the challenging behaviors are because the demands and expectations placed on them are beyond the skills that they have.
Right. That's that quote, right, where they, is it Eleanor Knost maybe, someone who says, children aren't giving us a hard time, they're having a hard time.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
And it really is a shift in perspective. I mean, you know, I can almost sense some people listening will be like, I don't know about that. So it is a shift in perspective. But yeah. The way that we see our children is going to guide the way that we interact with them. So if we're willing to, you know, explore looking at it this way and mm-hmm. You know, I was talking with someone the other day about the moment where it gets to that point where, like, the parent snaps and they feel like they have to move to punishment because the child won't comply or cooperate.
Right.
Comply is obviously doing what we say. Cooperate is both working together. But it gets that point, and then the parent pushes into plan A.
Yes.
If we are willing to explore using that push we feel from the inside to stay the course with collaborative problem solving, with seeing our kids that, okay, my child would do well if they could. This is tough right now. I'm going to work with them on these unsolved problems and these lagging skills.
Yeah.
We will see different results. But the thing is, if we continually revert to plan A, we all get exhausted. That's the other thing that Dr. Green really talks about, is it's exhausting to try and control our kids like that. And ultimately, we don't want to be doing that forever. Of course, we want them to grow into competent adults where they can problem solve on their own. So
right.
This is just building life skills with them. And us, of course.
And us. Right. I mean, there's
me, anyway.
Us building skills, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us were not raised collaboratively problem solving with our parents.
Right.
And so we have to cut ourselves some slack as we gain skills too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's go a little deeper into plan B.
Okay.
Because there's a plan B cheat sheet on his paperwork tab. I think the paperwork is under the resources. I'm just going to double check, and we'll send the links to. Yes, it's under resources, and it's called the paperwork, and this particular one I'm looking at is a plan B cheat sheet. And the first piece, and this might be challenging because some of us want to get our concerns out there, but the first piece is really listening to the child for their concerns. It's called the empathy step. So it's gathering information to understand the child's concern or perspective on the unsolved problem that you're discussing.
Okay.
So he talks about a neutral observation, like, I've noticed that you're leaving your clothes all over your bedroom floor. What's up?
Right.
And then, you know, he calls it drilling for information, where you use reflective listening. Oh, yeah, I don't care. My clothes are on the floor, you know. Okay, you don't care. And then asking clarifying questions. Well, you know, do you feel like you want them to be clean for when you need them, or, you know,
right.
Different questions. You're getting information about the situation, and then you try and understand things from their perspective. If we skip this step, we're not doing this approach because it won't be collaborative. If we think we know what they, you know, if we think we know what they're feeling and thinking and their perspective, we're mm-hmm. going to miss something. they're not going to feel heard. We're not going to have a connection to actually solve a problem. And if we take just a moment to kind of slow down and be with ourselves for a moment as you're listening here, and we consider, okay, have I ever had an experience in my life where somebody is trying to solve a problem with me or get me to do something, and they are, you know, seeming like they're interested in my experience of the problem or my perspective, but they rush through it, or they assume they know, you know, they finish my sentences, or they assume what I'm feeling. How do I feel?
Mm-hmm.
Not probably very good. But have we ever had an experience where someone actually does listen and does care? And if we haven't, then wow, we are doing this fresh. This is so new for us if we've never had anybody. And goodness, I would say check in your community or like online to see if anybody could give you some empathy sometimes so you know what it feels like.
Right.
I've
right.
done that with the nonviolent communication groups and stuff, and, like, it's helpful. So just want to insert that in there because, you know, we can talk about empathy, but empathy is such a felt experience.
Right.
To feel heard and to feel understood. So we're starting with doing that with our kids. So I just want to say here that I do share some mindfulness work, and that helps us become aware of, you know, what we're feeling and experiencing and thinking, and that can help a lot with empathy, helping it come through when we've got a lot going on inside of ourselves. So if this doesn't come naturally, it's okay. It's something that can be, it's a skill, you know?
It is a skill. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can develop it. I think humans innately have it, but I think it gets covered up by a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, empathy is the first step to understand our children, and the second is defining the problem. So basically, you're sharing the concern of the other party, which is probably you, the parent, you know. he does use this in schools, the teachers and stuff also. And once we learn this, we can use it with our kids if we've got more than one kid or they have a friend over or anything. You know, this is definitely applicable to different relationships.
Right.
So you're entering the concern of the other person and stating it as a concern. How is it affecting the child, and how is it affecting others? And then the other piece of this is, like, clarifying, you know, have I been clear about this? And maybe you do that in the empathy step with the child, too. You know, have I been clear, or do I understand clearly, you know?
Right.
This isn't, we're still not to the solution part yet. So it's important to let each step be the step that it is. And then there's no judgment or sarcasm or lecturing or anything either yet. Well, actually,
right.
That's not even part of this, but like, it's just leave that out of this. Try and be very
right.
specific about the concern. My concern is clothes on the floor are going to get rumpled and maybe dirty, stepped on, smelly. If they're wet, they could get moldy, and then
mm-hmm.
you won't have them for practice or school or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
Okay, that was just a laundry. I don't know, you know, laundry. So
the laundry is always a good. It's never ending, right?
Yeah, it's probably going to happen at least once, and it happens with all ages too.
right.
Yeah. So. The next step is the invitation step, and this is the ingredient or goal of this is to brainstorm solutions that are realistic.
Okay.
So you might find some come up that aren't realistic, and we can just go, is that really, do I really think, you know, you really think you could do that, or is that realistic? And we go, no, not really, you know, but you could put it on, like if you're brainstorming on paper, you could definitely put it down, or you could just,
right.
You know.
I think with little kids, too, it's probably a good idea just to write down whatever they say just to get it flowing, right?
Yes,
and maybe
absolutely.
With teenagers, too. Like, let's just value yes. everything, and it might make it even more fun. I don't know.
I think so. I like to
yeah.
just keep it open. Mm-hmm. And again, like, it's taken me a while to get to the point where I can. There's a little just tension around the whole thing initially because I still wanted to control everything and didn't
right.
realize that as I would let go of the control and trust this process that it would be better. But yes, I really agree with you. Keeping it open, writing it down, and then going through them. You know, definitely when you're brainstorming, brainstorming is just open brainstorming. And then you can go through them and go, is that something, we really want to do or you want to do? And usually the child is going to be like, no,
Or is it even about, trying to solve whatever that specific problem is? Is that even pertinent?
Right, exactly. Right.
I want to have a popsicle. Okay.
I'm not sure that'll get the laundry picked up off the floor.
Right.
Unless, yeah.
Right.
That's funny. The thing that came to my mind was like, unless they finish the popsicle, rinse off the stick, make sure it's clean, and go pick up the clothes, like, with the stick. That could be a fun game, maybe, for a little while, with the younger one. But anyway.
Yeah, my daughter would love that, actually. That would be a solution for her. Yeah.
Okay. The next one here, or this is the same stuff. Mm-hmm. It needs to be mutually satisfactory. So, like, both parties can do what they're agreeing to. It's realistic. And the solution actually addresses the concerns. Like you were saying, does that actually address the situation? So, you can restate the concerns. Mm-hmm. And that you figured out in the first two steps. And then I wonder if there is a way to, solve this problem. You want to stick as closely to the that were identified in the first two steps. Generating solutions is a team effort, so you can both put them down. Let's see. He talks about talking about what you think makes it skeptical for you. Like, if you're skeptical about a solution, just talk about it a little bit and see, I don't know about this. What do you think? I'm a little concerned, or I'm not sure if this one would work very well. But this step always ends with an agreement to return to plan B for the problem solving if the first solution doesn't stand the test of time, if it doesn't work. Because the point is to come up with durable solutions, ones that actually work. Long term.
Like, you wouldn't want to have to go pick up the dirty clothes with a popsicle stick every time, right?
They might not.
Right.
They might not.
I mean, well, they might. But what if you don't have a popsicle?
They'd have to, like, wash that one and keep it.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's, you're, like, a pro at this.
I've been doing this, like I say, for a while, and so I just... I mean, and the thing is, too, I've realized that, like, the negative effects of being forceful are so not what I want that I'm willing to do something else. And it's kind of fun. And for a long time, I was stuck in a place of this is not fun, I want this to feel better than it does for all of us. And, I'm human. I've got all kinds of emotions.
Right.
But embracing this has really helped me to be able to work through some of the mundane and lighten things up some.
Yeah. Being willing to wash and keep the popsicle stick. I mean, I like it.
Yes. So, let's see. I mean, it wouldn't work for everybody or every situation, but I think it just points to being open and creative and realistic. Mm-hmm. And, the point is at the end of the step, you're both agree to return to the plan B, collaborative problem solving, and make sure that you go through and, summarize the concerns, summarize the solution. With positive discipline, we talked about, trying something for a week. Set a time frame. Let's come back and talk about it at that point. Whatever works for the situation.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a shorter time frame or longer, depending. He really does encourage people to not rush through the process. And it can be hard when we just want to solve problems, to just want to rush through it. But and if you do, just keep going back to it and learning and that and just kind of take your time with it. And the other piece about this that he does like to encourage is being proactive in the heat of the moment. If we're not skilled in this, it's going to come out kind of, well, like anything else that we're not skilled at, right? It's gonna, you know, it's like your first painting or your first, I don't know, something you're writing or first music piece or whatever. It's gonna be kind of clunky,
right.
You know. And then
right.
as you practice, it becomes more skilled. It becomes more seamless in that. So whereas you can't really problem solve like this in the heat of the moment when feeling really angry or something, you might be able to down the road be able to do that a little bit more. But that really is dependent on where I think the adult is at, because we kind of got to lead the way with this. And it's totally fine to recognize in a situation that things are too heated right now to try and problem solve. We need to just, you know, diffuse, escalate, separate, so that we can get to a space inside ourselves where we can work through a problem more, you know, proactively and calmly.
Right.
So that's where the mindfulness work comes in. I found that these two work really well together, and that I wasn't able to really fully integrate this without the mindfulness piece to deal with the anger and kind of control and frustration that I was experiencing with just behaviors in general, kids not getting it, kids being kids, really, is what,
right.
You know, what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I'm just going to double check here and see if there's anything else I wanted to mention. Okay. This he does have a really helpful document, and it's his suggestion, Dr. Green's suggestion, to check out what he calls the ALSUP, and it's an assessment of lagging skills in unsolved problems. That's just an acronym, ALSUP, and that's on the paperwork, under resources in the paperwork tab. He has one that you can download, or you can, there's even a fillable, like, PDF there for you to look at. The ALSUP is a place where you can go, okay, for each child, if you've got more than one, these are some lagging skills. This child really can't do this very well, and these are some unsolved problems I have with this kid. And then you can decide, okay, these are the ones that might need plan A if it's a stereo situation. What kind of plan A am I going to do if I'm imposing my will on the child? That's a place where we can look at our choices. I always encourage parents to, like, write down your list of choices in this situation. You know, you've got a kid who's having a tantrum in your grocery store. Just write them all down. Anything that comes to your head. What do you think, you know, what do you think your choices are? If you don't feel like you have very many, then talk to another parent who's, you know, more skilled in the positive discipline. And then check off some that you don't want to do. Because if you don't want to smack your child, you don't want to yell at them, you know, like, cross those off and go, okay, I'm going to try this next time that happens in the grocery store that my kid has a tantrum. You know, I'm going to sit over to the side and hold them. Okay, wait, no, I'm too angry to do that. I can't. I need to, you know, do something else that will help us get through the situation. Honestly, what I thought of was like some sort of distraction technique. But we kind of, you know, you hear so much about different parenting things and how they affect our kids, and we have to be real with ourselves about where we are.
Yes.
To be able to implement anything helpful. So seeing what our choices are and crossing those things off the list that we don't want to do, and figuring out what we will do and what we will try.
What we can do instead, right.
Exactly, what we can
do
instead.
So maybe if your go-to when your child is having a meltdown in the store is to spank them or to threaten them and you no longer want to do those, then coming up with alternate is great, and keeping in mind what you do have to do. You know, there are lots of alternatives. Like you said, you know, if you have to distract them, you distract them. If you have to drop everything and leave, then you drop everything and leave. And then as you grow in skills, then you can begin to change plan A again, and plan A can change and grow with your skills.
Exactly. And then you can implement more of the plan B, the collaborative problem solving, which, you know, a lot of us are probably, you know, probably doing some of it anyway to some degree. I mean, anybody who's interested in a more of a collaborative approach with kids is probably bringing some of it in already to some degree. But the assessment of lagging skills and unsolved problems, I find helpful to look at with myself too. And then it helps me see what am I working on with myself. And then because our modeling is huge too. You know, I I'm facilitating a meditation challenge, and there was a mom in there who had a child who was hitting a younger child, 3 or 4, I think, and mom was feeling really frustrated with it and kind of the urge to spank or something, not that she was, but it was there, and she decided to go sit down and, you know, have some quiet time to breathe and meditate. And her child, you know, it started to go a little bit differently. The child, when she did that, the child sat down by her and stopped hitting. Like, there was a change, and that's what we're looking for in those situations. And so she was doing it for herself, but she was modeling it for her daughter, and there was a change, and that's
what
we're looking for. Mm-hmm. It was really helpful. I don't know exactly where they're at with things now, but I know it was helpful a few times. And little ones, they will watch us, you know, and they really pick up on how we handle emotions. So it's just an interesting dynamic there in the parent-child relationship to explore. Yeah.
Right.
Do you have any questions about how I've explained this or anything that feels like I'm leaving anything out here?
You know, I think it makes sense to me. I mean, the steps are that you change your lens, and then you go through the empathy piece with them, and you're really trying to get into their shoes, right, and to really see what's going on from their perspective.
Right.
And then together y'all are defining the problem, and you say what you see is the problem. And does your child also, I mean, assuming they're saying, you know, their view as well, right?
Yep. You're just kind of and guiding then, it until they get the skills where they can, you know, guide some with you. I mean, it depends on the age and the skill level of the child. My goal eventually is to hopefully my children will be able to take this into their lives. And I see them doing it with their little siblings some, you know, the older ones. Cause they've got 12 and 14-year-old and the 8-year-old, and they will do it some with the younger ones on their own.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and sometimes I think of it as like a business meeting. Like, would I go up and, like, grab a, you know, I mean, unless somebody was doing something crazy, would I go up and, like, grab a coworker and, like, try and force them somewhere? No, of course I wouldn't. I would try and work something out with them. Sometimes some of the things that I did with my oldest, I'm like, I never wanted to treat her that way. I would never treat somebody that way. Why? You know, why? There's a lot of reasons why. But ultimately, if I just bring it home to, I didn't have the skills, and I decided to learn the skills to handle myself differently, to handle what I'm feeling differently.
Right.
That's
to let go of that guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Putting the focus where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this feels really empowering for everybody because everybody is learning skills.
Right. Right. Yes. We do have some questions here. They're in the telecast event on Facebook that we can go to, or we can see if there's anybody live on that has any questions about what we've been talking about here. What do you think, Amy?
Let's ask our listeners who are live. So I just turned the Q&A. And if you have a question and you would like to, raise your hand and let us know if you want to ask a question. Give you all another minute. Let me see if this helps. Maybe this will give you all some commands so you can hear.
I would say that if anybody really likes to kind of listen to the different ways that this can be used, going to the livesinthebalance.org website, and they have a listening library, And all his stuff is on an iTunes podcast, too, if people have iTunes. There's just a lot on his Blog Talk Radio show that he's got that you can listen to, you know, the different situations. And, you know, his work is focused, you know, initially on behaviorally challenging kids, and I just use it with just any behavioral challenge. Don't have to label my kid as a behaviorally challenging kid to use it because it just works regardless. But it works really, it does work really well with kids that are really challenging. So it's good.
So no one has any questions on the line with us. So why don't we do, you want to start with one of the questions from the event page?
Yeah, I can go ahead and read one of these and see what, let's see. How can I get my son to listen? He's 4 and a half, super smart, but very rebellious. Started about a year ago when I got pregnant with his sister. He keeps, let's see, there's also, he keeps getting colds and flus. He's been a picky eater since transitioning to our foods, maybe eats 20 foods. Tired of having to cook an additional meal as I don't want to leave him without food and then getting sick because I think he doesn't eat a variety of things as he needs to. Okay. So a couple different things here. How can I get my son to listen? And I want to just clarify that sometimes when we as parents say, how can I get my child to listen, we mean how can I get them to comply. So I'm not sure if this person's question is that one or if it's like, listen, hear me, so that we can talk through things. There's a difference there, a little bit of a difference.
Right.
If we're saying, how can I get my child to listen, to actually hear me when I am talking and to consider my point of view, that is going to be a matter of connecting with that child, strengthening the relationship. Obviously, kids, you know, they get distracted. They get focused on things they enjoy. If we have tough times with them, they might be a little standoffish when they feel hurt. So, there could be a few different things going on there. But going up to a child who seems to be ignoring us and connecting, getting down to their level, making eye contact, maybe just spending a few moments quietly next to them before we talk, or finding a place of caring inside of ourselves before we try and initiate the conversation, can help them feel a connection with us that isn't coming from that like forceful place inside. If you mean how can I get them to comply, I would say consider how can I, you know, create a relationship with my child or nurture a relationship with my child that, where we can collaborate, where we can work together, and also where you can know, okay, when is it that I need to just speak a boundary and be the leader and lead my child towards what needs to be done and get that cooperation. I feel like, Amy, you're probably going to... Hi there.
Sorry,
it's okay.
I didn't hear what you said.
Okay.
Something was talking in my ear.
Okay. Yeah, I heard it too. I think you and I are on the same page about kids don't often want to listen or comply if they don't feel connected, safe, trusting us. It really is a matter of strengthening that connection. And I'm hearing that mom is getting tired of, you know, having to cook an additional meal. This would also be a great thing to start with the collaborative problem solving. I mean, I know how I personally handle this situation. I've been in that situation before, and we have some ways I could share. But first, Amy, do you have anything else you want to share?
You know, I was just thinking about sort of the positive discipline that I think you touched on. And, you know, when your son is busy and doing something and maybe you need him to get on his shoes and you're probably trying to gather backpacks and other things, you know, one thing that instead of sort of calling across the room, get your shoes on, it really can be helpful to walk over, to put your hand on their shoulder and say, you know, acknowledge that they're busy. Maybe he's playing with a car or drawing, and I see that you're drawing and it's time to get your shoes on. Do you want to put your left shoe on first or your right shoe? And so you're really sort of getting their attention. You're connecting with them physically. You know, you're smiling and you're touching them and you're engaging with them. And that can be a really good way to begin to win over their cooperation instead of trying to power over them and kind of call to them from across the room, which really can just sort of create not only a barrier, but, you know, can create a little bit of disconnection too. And that can be really helpful. And that's sort of what came to my mind for that. But, you know, it's hard to know without a specific situation what is going on there.
Definitely. And I have found that it's really kind of... I like to laugh at myself often. But, you know, there will be times when I've got one child who's just a daydreamer. She's very imaginative, and she's often playing and, you know, and, like, she'll get ready when it's time to go when she's really engaged with getting ready.
Right.
But until that point, she's just doing what she's doing, and I will, you know, can you get ready? We're getting going, you know, and I've got five of them, so I'm, like, corralling all of them. And then I'm realizing, wow, you know, I know that if I go over to her and talk to her and look at her eyes and invite her to go to the stairs where the coats and the shoes are, she will get ready. But here I am wasting my breath from across the room, and it's just not very effective. And so it's kind of like looking at it from a practical point of view, too. It's like, is what I'm doing effective to get my child to listen? And if it's not, let's try these other things because, you know, it just might work a lot better. And it takes some repetition and getting used to. And there may be a little resistance in yourself and your child initially if it's not something you're used to. But that's how it is with things that are new. We just got to, you know, gently, persistently kind of stay the course. And the piece about, you know, the picky eater bit, we've had that. And I also had a child who was allergic to, like, over 25 foods, and so she just could not eat a lot of things, and so we just kind of had to be patient for a while with that, and we would just minimize the unhealthy options and maximize the healthy options in the house so that I didn't have guilt over, you know, food that was just not very good going into my child. It just kind of relaxed about it. But I also adopted an approach to food where the kids get to help in a few different ways. They can help with meal preparation or meal planning, grocery shopping, meal preparation, and snack preparation, like if we, you know, set any snack trays or anything like that. And then when it comes to meal times, they have the standard, like, dinner choice, or there's leftovers, and we have, like, a sandwich or a salad. So I don't have to be, like, a short order cook. Now, I did have to cook an additional meal for a long time for the kids that had allergies, and it kind of gave me a new perspective on the short order cook idea that, like, you know, maybe it's not altogether bad. But if it gets exhausting, then deciding on some sort of approach you can live with, like, okay, I'll cook this, and then, you know, like, I'll leave the meat and the sauce and the spaghetti separate or whatever it is so that the child can eat just the meat and just the this or, you know, that kind of thing, having different things if you can keep them separate when you eat them. And to me, it just boils down to allowing the child some choice and myself some choice in how I present the food or how I offer the food and how I help them learn the skills of, you know, meal planning and preparation that they're going to use when they become adults.
You know, I agree. I don't even know how many people have told me through the years that they found out later in life that they were, you know, very picky eaters as children, and they found out later in life as they got older and were able to pay more attention but they actually were very sensitive to certain foods, that it didn't digest well, it made their stomachs upset, and it really sort of helped them understand what was going on for them when they were younger, even though they had sort of been labeled picky and stuff like this. But also, I think food, like the sensory aspect of food can be very overwhelming for some children. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's what the, you know, collaborative problem solving is about, you know, find out what it's like for him mm-hmm. to try different foods or to feel different foods in his mouth. Or you said that he eats almost no meat, you know, what is it about it? You know, is it the texture or is it, you know, the way it bites? You know, there's really so much curiosity to have there. And being heard as you're listening in this process can be very helpful too. So I think it's really important that we really consider sort of that sensory aspect of it. And then, like Amy said, the food sensitivities, and then inviting them to help and then giving them choices. I think that we have this reflex as parents oftentimes about this idea of a short order cook, and we tend to get like it's a trigger and we get mm-hmm. upset, and I'm not going to be a short order cook, and I can understand that, especially because sometimes parenting is just exhausting, and at the end of the day the last thing you want to do is make two or three meals. Right, but sometimes, you know, like sometimes you do have to make two different meals, or like what we do too, and Amy said she does, is having leftovers or having a sandwich or some yogurt and fruits or something that maybe is less taxing on you can be a good option. Mm-hmm. And we do the same thing, Amy. We maximize our healthy choices and just kind of minimize the other stuff. So I hope that she finds that helpful. Did you want to add anything?
Yeah, well, the only thing is I'm noticing, you know, the word rebellious, and I was rebellious. It's all about rebelliousness. And I think it may be helpful to embrace or explore the first step of the collaborative problem-solving approach of changing your lens to saying, okay, you know, I'm experiencing this as rebellious, and I can also look at it as, my kid is challenging but will do well when he can, and that there's some unsolved problems and lagging skills here, maybe with him and maybe with me, and I'm going to look at it this way and see what happens.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and I like you bringing
the labels we give our children, they make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And how we treat them and respond to them and think of them.
It's really, yes. it changes the way that we feel. And yet, I acknowledge that, you know, using new language, you and I were talking about this earlier before the call, using new language doesn't feel natural.
Right.
And it's going to feel funny, and if we're if our beliefs aren't really in alignment with the words that we're using, when we start to use more empowering language like this, our beliefs will follow as we stay the course.
Mm-hmm.
So that feeling, uncomfortable feeling, sometimes comes from like this doesn't feel true, and then you can look at it and go, but you know, could it be true that my child is, you know, just doesn't have the skills, or this is just an unsolved problem that we need to solve together, most likely.
Right.
Yeah.
I like to think that when I mess up, it's just because I'm lacking skills.
Well, ultimately, it is. You
right.
know, I mean,
right.
the skill to do something consistently.
Right.
Yeah. Or to know, you know, I mean, part of the skill, you know, that I developed over time was to recognize when I was getting into that tense reactive mode, you know, and being able to get some space. You can't turn it off, but mm-hmm. getting space to be able to go address it, it can help ourselves calm through it, you know. And that's the skill in itself. So our kids, you know, it's going to take our kids time to learn that kind of thing too.
Right.
We have a couple more questions here. Shall we go on?
Yeah.
I mean, we can open it up for if anybody's on the call and they have something while we're talking.
Sorry. The Q&A session is on, so if you decide you want to ask a question live, please do, and we will read the last four digits of your phone number if you want to ask a question. And otherwise, we'll continue to go through the questions from the event page.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. This one is, what are some ways, verbiage, to help your child know it's okay to come up with their own ideas? My 5-year-old is trying so hard to come up with solutions she thinks I want to hear. She gets stuck. She's very sensitive to other people's response to her and wants to get it right. I tell her all ideas are valid and there's no right or wrong answer and we're working together to solve a problem, but it doesn't seem to help. It sounds like to me that the mom is offering an open space to problem solve together, and I'm not sure if mom is experiencing some frustration with this situation, just wanting some ways, you know, she can actually speak that to the child. I think just continuing to keep that open space and maybe noticing if there's anywhere else where she feels, you know, shut down. Any verbiage that you feel that comes out where she would feel that way, to maybe bring attention to that and change that up a little bit, just by observing your child. Like at other times when she's not problem solving, if she's bringing that in there.
I wonder if she could model coming up with something that's just as crazy and off the wall. Like would it help if she came up with, you know, just modeling having something that is, doesn't make sense, to get that idea that it's okay not to have the solution?
Yeah, definitely. Just write them all down and mom come up with just kind of anything.
Right, like maybe make a game out of it. Let's just shout words out, like peanut butter pie and write on the back of a cockroach and, you know, like just crazy stuff to maybe just get her to stop being so much in her head and more in her body and just having fun with it, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, and you could say, you know, I really want to hear your ideas and what would work for you or what comes to you, to just continue to encourage that. And then maybe back off and trust that she'll get it. If there's a lot of pressure on her to come up with ideas,
that could
feel kind of stifling too. So I'm not, it's hard for me to tell overall kind of what's going on there without being right there to hear an interaction. If you sense that she's feeling like she's got to come up with something that will be okay with you, then you could speak to that and say, you know, I'm wondering if you are trying to come up with something that you know is okay with me. I just want you to know I want to hear everything that comes to your mind. There might be something that you have to say that is really helpful and I didn't think of, or, you know, that kind of thing. It sounds like she might already be saying these kinds of things.
Right.
If she's saying, I tell her all ideas are valid, there's no right or wrong answer, and we're working together. And go with some of the solutions that she comes up with that she thinks you want to hear. If it's realistic
and it's
mutually satisfactory, go with that, because it's coming from her.
It's a learning experience.
Yeah. Right.
Right, part of it is that you go back and see it as you have the invitation and you come up with solutions. And if you, like Amy said, well, we're both Amy, right? Like Amy Phoenix said, if you go ahead and have those mutually agreeable things and then it doesn't work out and you go back and start over, you know, because maybe it ended up not to work, that's okay.
Yes.
I was thinking, too, like, with my daughter, sometimes when I know she wants to talk, but she just can't quite get started and she's stuck, sometimes we just start drawing together. Mm. And we'll draw pictures, and sometimes while she also likes to skate, we skate in the house, and sometimes when she's doing something else, it's easier for her to let it flow, the talking and what's going on, and, you know, maybe being sort of less, let's sit at the table and do this, and more, let's do this kind of nonchalantly and carefree while we're playing a game can be really helpful.
I like that. Yeah, that's big too. Allowing that space mm-hmm. to kind of work through it in different ways, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be interested to see if people are listening right now or they listen to recording, they go into the event page and say, yeah, that was helpful. Or no, here, I need more space here.
Right. And please do. I hope they'll feel free to do that. And we'll.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd like to continue to help problem solve around this.
Definitely. There are two more. Do you have time here? I don't know exactly how long we're playing.
I have time. It's 8 o'clock. So if y'all have to leave the call, I still have time, Amy, if you do. And if you need to leave the call, we will email this to you. But, of course, we would love for you to stay on the call as well.
Yeah,
so,
I do.
Okay.
And if there are other people... Again, listening to have a question, they can bring it up. But there's two more in the group that we can answer. I think there's just
okay.
two. Or share anyway. Okay. This next one is, and this we spoke about this a little bit, how do you handle kids ignoring you? For example, they need to pick something up they stopped playing with or getting out of the car when we get home. They either completely ignore or look at you like you have three heads. I've been there. By the fourth time, I want to yell. Mine are just turning 3 and 4 and a half. Yes, I hear you. I can only laugh because it releases the tension, and, you know, it's good that way. Not laughing at you, just laughing with you. It's not funny in the moment, you know? Unless we just go like, oh, my goodness, you know, like they're. Unmuted. Okay. Can you hear me?
Sorry, yes.
Okay, good deal. So, anyways, we did talk a little bit about making eye contact, going up to a child, connecting on their level. Obviously, if they're in the car, that's going to mean turning around or using your voice to connect. I noticed that, you know, if my voice is harsh or aggravated and I take a few, you know, deep breaths and kind of consider to allow my muscles to soften and choose inside that, okay, I'm going to approach this in a less harsh way and, you know, more kind way, more collaborative way. Then when I connect with my voice and I say, hey, I'm trying to work this out with you, or maybe not hey, but, you know, that's kind of something that I say. My kids are okay with that. Hey, I'm trying to work this out with you.
Right.
Are you hearing what I'm saying? You know, it's time for us to go in, or I need to lock up the car. We've got to go in to do this thing. Can I help you get unbuckled, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to look at a book for a couple minutes while I clean everything out and I'll come back and get you? They might still look at me like I have three heads, but they're more willing to work through it with me. And that, when you say by that fourth time, I want to yell, I think as soon as one piece of this is that awareness of what's going on in my mind and body. Am I going, oh, you know, they're not listening at all, or, you know, they're ignoring me. And there's tension building in our own bodies, and the thought process is not really going anywhere particularly helpful. That's our cue. Okay, what's going on within me? Can I bring some attention to me and my body and my breath to be able to allow some space for my nervous system to calm down some so that I can then connect with my child in a way where they're going to feel safe and like they want to hear what I have to say. And use that energy of I want to yell as a cue, again, to take that breath, take those moments of awareness, and to push through. I talked about that earlier, too, to push through, to stay the course of working with them, connecting with them, collaborating with them. I also sometimes will visualize us just getting in the house or, like, whatever task it is, it being done so that I know where I'm trying to go with this. I don't want to go this harsh path, you know. I want to use plan B, and we're not sitting down at a table doing the collaborative problem solving, but I can use it in myself, I guess, you know, looking at my own stuff at the time. And if we find ourselves yelling, it's good to just be aware, like notice what's going on in the body and mind so we have some space to see what brings about this response in us, and then we can change it from there. What I noticed with myself was, like, my kids were responding sometimes out of fear, the older two especially, and my third one somewhat. And it took some time for them to want to hear me, to want to connect with me, to want to collaborate with me, of me doing my own inner work, for them to really start to respond more consistently. Now, they're still kids, so, you know, they still have their moments, but when I come up to them and I talk to them, they don't look at me like, what are you doing here? You know, why do you want to talk to me? So I don't know that this is this mom's, you know, issue or anything, but I think it's just something worth speaking to, that the change in the way that I communicate with them really has made a difference in the way that they'll respond and hear me when I'm willing to connect with them in a respectful way.
Yeah, it does make a big difference. I know when I'm gruff, I can pretty much guarantee my child is going to dig in her heels. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I let go of that and, you know, sort of recognize that I'm being gruff, then as soon as I soften, she softens, and that makes a big difference. The one thing I was noticing, too, is that she said, by the fourth time, I want to yell. So mm-hmm. I think right there you have some brilliant information not to get to the fourth time. Yeah. And so that really means being proactive and saying, you know, the first time you say it and they don't listen, and so the second time you're going to smile and you're going to open your door and get out and look at them and open their door and smile and say, hey, guys, let's go. Do you guys want to pretend like, you know, and play is always a huge part. I always love to bring play into it. Do you guys want to pretend to be cheetahs, or do you want to pretend to be elephants when we go inside, and sort of invite them to bring that playfulness with you inside just to get them moving and also to create that connection. And the other thing that I know, that my daughter does not like to be rushed. So she thinks that I'm rushing her to get ready or rushing to buckle or rush to get out of the car. Now, of course, she's six now, she'll say, Mom, I feel like you're rushing me. And so she can do that, but that's really sort of a recent thing. And before, it would just be, it was like time slowed down when she felt rushed. And so sort of being mindful of the speed at which we say, okay, get your stuff and let's get out of the car, or, okay, so, you know, sort of slowing down that tempo when we speak to them can be really helpful. So those are the only two things that came to mind for me.
Yeah, definitely. I do agree with that. Noticing when we're getting to that fourth, fifth, sixth, whatever time, and noticing after the first or second time that, like, okay, yeah, I need to take a different approach with this, in a more collaborative approach. And I realize that sometimes we can feel afraid of, like, I don't want to do it for them, or I don't want to always have to play. Mm-hmm. But really the language of children, that is their language, is play and connection. And when we think of long-term, the relationship that we want with our children, us being able and willing to meet them in a communication that is mutually respectful, even if it's not entirely playful, but it's mutually respectful, we're building that relationship that we want with them. We're helping them build, you know, good interpersonal relationship skills. So bringing it long-term and bringing it, you know, the long-term to the short-term can help us kind of move through that resistance that we might have to doing it that way. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we have one last question.
Yeah.
Do you want to read it?
Or you can. Go ahead.
Okay. So she says, I have a 2.5-year-old boy who seems to have intense reactions to things, for example, crying because it turns the light off instead of him. Is this a normal stage, or how do I teach him emotional stability at this age?
Okay.
Well, I would say yes, this is very normal. at 2.5, their cognitive development is right at, you know, he was so excited to turn that light off, and it was such a disappointment that he didn't get to, that he's flooded with emotion and he burst into tears, because that's really all he's able to do, is he's flooded and it comes out and there it is. And teaching emotional stability is really about modeling emotional regulation yourself. So it would be empathizing, which the CPS model talks about as well, like, oh, you're so disappointed. You really wanted to do that. And letting him have his emotions. And this is the really hard part. This is, like Amy was talking about, the empathy piece can be hard if we're not used to it. And letting children have their emotions and giving them the space to be heard for their emotions can be hard, because we just want to fix it. It hurts us to see them, and it's not something we're used to. And so giving them that space to be upset and to just cry and be upset is okay. And it's also okay to problem solve. Well, you know, once his upset is gone, you know, oh, I wonder what we could do. Should we, you know, do you want me to turn it off and you can turn it on again? And those things are okay. Or you could even say, you know, you could model, I made a mistake. Oh, I'm so sorry I made a mistake. How about I try again? Let me turn this off so you can turn it on. I think those things can be really helpful. And also, in order for him to become emotionally regulated, it's helpful for you to remain emotionally regulated, because we all have these things called mirror neurons in our brains. And when we're able to remain calm, our children's brains see the calmness in us, and then it imitates us, and it helps them to calm down as well. And that's just part of the skill building, is practicing that over and over and over.
Yes. And remaining calm when our kids are upset takes practice. I don't even know if it's remaining calm. It's the right way to say it. Nothing wrong with what, you know. But,
right.
Okay, say they're upset and then we get upset. I mean, it just happens, right?
It does,
it just happens. It's like I cannot choose what arises, but I can choose how I respond.
right.
So if we become reactive, you know, upset, angry, whatever, frustrated when the child is upset, or just uncomfortable, okay,
mm-hmm.
Partly that's from a protective instinct inside of us to nurture and care for our young, and then partly that can be from our own kind of just unresolved baggage from our own lives, you know, there's probably plenty of times we were told to kind of shove it down or stop it when we were upset.
Right.
And a lot, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's there. So there's uncomfortable feelings inside of us for various reasons. And when that happens, what we can do, and I think, you know, generations upon generations upon generations have done this to some degree, is we can shut our kids down, want to stop them from crying or being upset, wanting to curb the situation. And like I say, part of that is from a protective instinct to take care of them. So it's not that we don't want to acknowledge that we want, you know, well-being for our kids, and that upset is a signal that we need to hear, okay? Obviously, if our kid falls down and breaks their leg, we know that crying is, there's a purpose for that crying, and it's a physical purpose, and they need attention. And the thing is, when it gets to an emotional situation like that, the child has, you know, something they wanted, and they can't have it, or maybe they can, but they're just still upset. There's something there for them. It's mm-hmm. not as easy always to see that crying as needed, as purposeful. We
right.
might think, oh, this needs to happen less, you know?
Right.
And sometimes there's something going on with a child where they need some more space to work through emotions. And there's kind of some various ways with that, but I totally agree with you. A 2.5-year-old, they're going to need to cry sometimes. And
right.
Some do have intense reactions to things, you know, more than others. It just kind of depends on the personality.
Okay.
And some have emotions that are kind of saved up, you know?
Right.
And they kind of spill out at times like this, where you're like, wow, is it really that upsetting? It's hard to know, but what
right.
you're sharing, and I definitely support that, is that in the collaborative problem-solving approach embraces this too, is listening, empathizing, reflecting back what we think they're experiencing. You know, you're crying, I turned off the light. You wanted to turn off the light. And then, you know, maybe try it again and do something different. Or I'll hold you while you cry. I'm here with you. And if an adult can't do that, it's going to take practice for us to be with those uncomfortable emotions that come up in us when that happens.
Right.
And it's okay to know that, hey, you know, it's a little much for me to do that. I need to learn how to do that. But you can. And then as we're, and I'm so grateful that you brought up the mirror neurons, because our nervous system is providing information to our child and vice versa. But since we're the leader, they're getting a picture of what is safe, what's okay, what's not okay. So us being able to honor what's going on in our brain and nervous system and our body is really paramount to being able to provide that sense of safety that the child needs. There's so much here, and there's so much good information about this topic. But it's really
right.
fascinating that, you know, we know that there's nonverbal interaction going on between people. You know, like you get a feeling from someone. Well, our kids get a feeling from us. And that the more that we're able to work with our feelings and, you know, bring ourselves into a space of regulation and safety, then we can provide that for the child, and then the child learns regulation. But it does take time, practice, and emotional maturing for us and for them.
Mm-hmm.
So be gentle with yourselves along the way with all of this, I'd say, with the mindfulness, awareness, emotions, and identifying the unsolved problems and lagging skills, and then finding solutions to those to be able to address them and helping the kids, you know, learn the skills that they need, and yourself, the skills that you need to be able to help them.
Yeah. It's true. We really sort of want to be quick to be hard on ourselves. But it just doesn't help.
Mm-mm. No, it doesn't. And we can change those patterns too. So,
right.
You know, it's all a process.
It is. Well, that was the last question, and it's about 20 after. Is there anything else you want to say, Amy?
You know, I think I'm pretty good. For people who are interested more in learning more about the collaborative problem-solving approach, please go to Dr. Green's site. It's livesinthebalance.org. He's got lots of information over there. And if you're interested in learning more about mindfulness for yourself or your children, I do provide some support in learning more about that, which helps with emotional regulation and focus. And you can go learn more about that at presenceparenting.com.
Thank you, Amy. She also has mindfulness for children exercises and a Clear Kids mindfulness course for kids going on right now, which looks really exciting. So I'm just going to plug that for you, Amy.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm excited about it. I trained with mindfulschools.org to provide mindfulness with kids, and I'm really excited.
It's really neat. So I wanted to just mention a few things that are going on in case you guys are interested in registering. On Monday, I'm going to be speaking with Sheena Hill of Parenting Works. She's going to be talking about raising an emotionally intelligent child, even if you weren't one. And you can register for all of these at the parentingbeyondpunishment.com site if you click on the link to the 2015 Peaceful Parenting No Spank Challenge. All of them, you can register for all of them there. On Tuesday, Maya Coleman and Kathy Gordon of Hand in Hand Parenting are going to be talking about helping children with persistent behavior struggles. And then next Thursday, I'll be talking with Robin Peters Bennett and some guest educators. We're going to be talking about responding with positive discipline. And so that's all going on next week, and we would love for you to join us for those, and they're all free events as well. So, Amy, thank you so much for doing this and coming on and sharing your experience and your knowledge. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And we look forward to seeing you guys on the event page and in our communities. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.